So that would have made Ishmael how old? 14. How old was Abraham when Sarah died? How do you know that?
He was
10 years older than Sarah. And Sarah was 127 when she died. So you had to add the 10 years on that one. How old was Abraham when he died? 175. Okay, how old was Isaac when he married Rebekah? 40. That would make his dad 140. Just add 100. Okay, how old was Isaac when Jacob was born? 60. So that would have made Abraham 160. We just add 100 years because he was 100 years old when Isaac was born. And thus he was still alive because, as we move on, how old was Isaac when he died? 108? 180.
I have a question.
Okay, please ask.
Is 10 a different question than what it says?
More than likely. Okay, well then what does Genesis 26:34 tell us? Nathan, what does Genesis 26:34 tell us?
When Esau was 40 years old, he married Judith, the daughter of Barry, the Hittite, and Bathmath, the daughter of Enon.
All right, what does Genesis 31:38 tell us?
It's not the same, I lied. 31. 38.
Oh, yeah. Not exactly the same, is it? Little preposition for?
Yes, but I'm still confused.
Okay, all right. How old was, in Genesis chapter number 10, in Genesis chapter 26, verse 34, how old was Esau?
40.
How old was Jacob? 40. Does that mean Jacob left for Haran when Esau married his wives? Not necessarily, but he had to be at least 40.
Oh.
So for the answer number 10, greater than or equal to 40. Because he was the same age. See, if they're born at the same time, Courtney, they're the same age. Yeah, there's a little bar under the greater than sign for greater than or equal to.
Yeah. You don't even know what a greater sign is. That's right. The greater, the alligator eats the bigger number.
And you haven't.
Greater than or equal to.
No.
You would write X is greater than or equal to 40 and the alligator would be eating the X.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. The alligator, Nathan, the alligator's eating the X, not the 40. Because 40's less than X.
I know, but you were saying that this was good. No, I said the X is greater.
All right, let's move on. enough. Genesis 31:38. How old was Jacob when he left Haran? At least 60, because he served for 20 years. Now, who was born as Jacob returns from Haran? Who was born as Jacob was returning from Haran? Wasn't it Benjamin? He was born in Bethlehem, Ephrathah. So who was born before Benjamin?
Joseph.
So Joseph was probably born when Jacob was how old?
Between
40 and 60, more likely closer to 60. So approximately Joseph was born when his dad was 60 or somewhere in that neighborhood, maybe a little bit less, maybe a little bit more. So how old was Joseph when he rose to power in Egypt?
30.
He was 30 years old. We learned that in the chapter we're looking at this evening. In Genesis chapter 45, verse 6, how old was Joseph when he saw his brothers again? What does the verse say? What does the verse say?
It says, for the famine has been in the land these 2 years, and there are still 5 years left.
So how old was Joseph?
32, at least.
Yeah, 39. They had the 7 years of plenty first.
Oh, yeah.
So if we're into 2 years of famine, it's been 9 years since he's seen his brothers, but at least 9 years because he was in jail and with Potiphar and others. So he's at least 39. So we'll put a greater than or equal to 39. How old was Jacob when he saw Joseph in Egypt? Is that what it says?
It says the years of my sojourning are 130.
130. Okay, so how long did it take Jacob to get to see Joseph after Joseph recognized his brothers? In other words, what's the distance between question 13 and 14? How old was Joseph? How long would it take his brothers to go back, get their father, and get him to come back to Egypt? Make a guess. What's your guess, Anna?
2 years.
2 years. That would be the upper limit, probably. Because, yeah, I would think that it would take a lot less time than that. Because they sent them to go get grain, and they better get the grain back to the family in a reasonable amount of time. So I would think it would be less than a couple of years. So if we say that Joseph was, say, 40 years old, now, take a look at the two answers we have for number 14. How old was Jacob when he saw Joseph in Egypt? And how old was Joseph? What did we just say? 40. So how could we use those two numbers to determine something? And get what? Okay, if we subtract those two, how old was Jacob when Joseph was born? 90. What did we have for question 11?
Around 60.
Around 60. So there's somewhere in here where 30 years may not be entirely accounted for, either in the life of Joseph or in the life of Jacob. But 30 years in a timeline of 2000, not that big a deal. So how old was Jacob when he died?
One hundred and forty-seven.
So how long was he in Egypt? 10 years?
17 years.
Genesis 50:22. How old was Joseph when he died?
110.
So how long was he at least in power in Egypt?
70 years.
At least 80 years. He was 30, according to question number 12, and he died at 110, number 16. So he was in power for 80 years. Jim, you think that some of the congressmen and representatives are there too long now? This guy was in power for 80 years, probably outlived a few pharaohs. Yeah, because Pharaoh searched for a wise and discerning man, didn't he? You know, we could stand having Joseph ruling for 80 years, I suppose. Okay, how long was Israel to be in Egypt? 400 years. If you read Exodus 12, verse 40, what does it say there?
Now the time that the sons of Israel were in Egypt was
430. So is it 400 or 430? What does Galatians 3:17 say? It says 430 years later. Okay, but the real question is, when did this time frame begin? When would you start the time, the stopwatch on the 400 years? When did it begin? When Jacob got there? Okay, that's a perfectly acceptable answer. When else could you start the stopwatch? Why would you say when Jacob got there? Okay, when Jacob came, they all settled there. He brought all of his children and the whole nation was there. What else could we say? That's a good answer. We could also say possibly when Joseph got there. So I'm not entirely sure when this time frame begins, but in what year was Israel released from Egypt? Yes, you do, Courtney. What year were they released from Egypt?
Did we have this last week? 1445.
Right. 1445. From the time Israel was officially a nation at the Exodus to the time that the walls were built, the beginning and the ending events of the nation of Israel in the book of the Old Testament was 1,000 years. Okay, now why do we want to take a look at these numbers? Well, I find it interesting just to make sure everything fits. But take a look at your brain burner. And we may get around to doing the timeline. What I really want you to do is to take a look at the question. How does understanding the number of years in Genesis, these 130 years, these 80 years, 175 years, etc., help you to understand and interpret Genesis? And as you begin to think about that, answer this question as well. What are some other factors that need to be considered when interpreting Genesis? Okay, take a few minutes and write down some thoughts there. Okay, what things do you have there? How does understanding the number of years in Genesis help you to understand and interpret Genesis? Or what other factors do you see need to be considered that we've even talked about before? Because we want to understand Genesis correctly. Okay, the true age of the earth. I think that's a good answer. There are some scientific realities that we can back up with the scriptures, that the earth is maybe 6 to 10,000, maybe 15,000 years at the most old. It's a good one. Right, these are not myths or comic book stories. These are real people who lived real ages, who had real children at real times. These are real live stories. But in addition to that, one of the things I want us to recognize is when you look at Genesis 22 and you look at Genesis 23, there may be 100 years between those two chapters. And we read it, and we're gathering this information about these real life stories, and we think that it happened in a very brief period of time. How much time do we have between Abraham and the entry, or between Abraham and, say, the Exodus, or Abraham and even Joseph? I have a study Bible that says that Joseph died in 1804 and Abraham was born in 2165, so that would be about 350 years. Divide that by 50 chapters and you get or if you start in chapter 12, that 30 chapters, you're looking at maybe 10 years per chapter that these things are happening. It's not as though God spoke to Abraham every day and it was recorded. It's not as though one day Ishmael's being born, the next day Isaac's being born. One day Abraham's being circumcised, the next day Isaac's being born. It's not happening that way. We need to understand that even as we studied the life of Jacob, that was over a period of 20 years. And it seems like it happened so quickly. But we need to understand that these are real life stories happening over definite periods of years. Now, what other things do we need to make sure we understand when we're looking at the book of Genesis? And this is going to have some application to this evening's chapter we look at. What other things do we need to understand in the book of Genesis as we interpret it? What's one of the things we've even brought up in class that we need to watch out for? We don't want to apply something that can't, that should not be applied yet. The law. Israel's not under the law yet. They don't even know what the law is. The law has not been given. They're not under law. They're not under any law except, as we've said before, the law of conscience and some special revelations that God has given. We need to understand that when Abraham marries his half-sister, he is not sinning because that was forbidden by the law. It wasn't. It may have been forbidden by the law, but it wasn't forbidden to Abraham. Any other kind of comments? All right, well then let's take a look at Genesis chapter 41. Genesis chapter 41. I read my Bible on the way to church. My wife drives me and I get these insects in my Bible. I happen to close it on insects. Kind of funny. Yeah, there's the other part of him over here. Okay. Yeah. Okay. All right. Genesis 41 begins with, now it happened at the end of 2 full years. Now what, 2 full years of what?
After Joseph interpreted.
Yeah, after Joseph interpreted the cupbearer and the baker's dreams, 2 full years, and Pharaoh had a dream. And what was the essence of the dreams? The first part was? 7 what kind of cows?
Fat cows.
7 fat cows are eaten by 7 skinny cows. But here's the key. What else did Pharaoh dream about the cows? And it may be in what he tells Joseph. Yes, it's in verse 21.
They didn't get fat,
so there's no change in the skinny cows. You would think if they ate 7 fat cows, they would get fat. But there was no difference. Now, do cows eat cows?
No.
Not so much, but unfortunately, we feed cows in America. That's how mad cow disease gets spread. If you just fed cows grain, if you let them eat grass, mad cow disease wouldn't spread. But in the feed that they give cows, there's beef. And that's how mad cow disease spreads from cow to cow. I thought that was kind of strange that we fed our cows beef, but whatever. Okay, then the second part of the dream, letter B, what happens in the second part of his dream?
7
fat ears are eaten by 7 skinny or thin or scorched ears. Now, it says ears of grain. What is that? Wheat. It is not what? Corn, because corn was from the Americas, the Native Americans. Egypt didn't know about corn. Where was all this happening in Pharaoh's dream? Did you get a location?
The Nile.
The Nile. Why is the Nile so important?
The source of water.
Source of water for the entire country of Egypt. Do you know how Egypt gets its crops watered? When the Nile floods. So the Nile is very important to the agriculture of Egypt. And letter B, the second line, what happened to the skinny ears? No change in the skinny ears either. I've had worse dreams than this. But other people have had worse dreams than this. But what was Pharaoh's spirit? How did he respond in his spirit? He was troubled. And why Was he troubled? What was the reason? No one could interpret it for him. Now, he had a whole slew of these guys, magicians of Egypt and wise men who were supposed to be able to tell him what his dreams meant, but no one dared to speak to him. So somebody comes to the rescue, and who comes to the rescue? The baker? No, not the baker. That would have been in another dream. The cupbearer, the baker is dead at this moment. At this moment in the passage. And the cupbearer reveals to Pharaoh that Joseph can interpret the dream. So Pharaoh brings in Joseph, and what is Joseph's acknowledgement first of all? Verse 14 says, Pharaoh sent and called for Joseph, and they hurriedly brought him, changed his clothes and shaved himself and came to Pharaoh. Pharaoh thinks Joseph can interpret his dreams, and what does Joseph acknowledge? It's a matter of God giving the interpretation. Joseph freely admitted in verse 16 that it was not him. It was God who would give Pharaoh the proper interpretation. So as Joseph listens to Pharaoh's dreams, the first thing he says is the dreams are one. They're not separate dreams. And the essence of the dreams is that there will be what? 7 years of harvest and plenty and barns to overflowing. There will be a tremendous harvest for 7 years. And then there will be 7 years of famine. How severe will these 7 years of famine be? Pretty darn. Okay, that's one way to put a couple of adjectives before it, or an adverb and an adjective.
Very severe.
Very severe. Whoa. Okay, severe being the adjective and very being the adverb. How severe? Very severe. Okay, how very severe? Extremely very severe. It'll ravage the land. What will it do to the people? It'll take everything away. What does it say in verse 31? No, read verse 31 carefully. What? They'll forget about how good it was. This will be so bad, they'll forget about how good it was. Sometimes we forget about how good it was. Or sometimes we remember how good it was. But this famine is going to be so bad that the good years, you know, you think about it, you go, those were the good old days. Back when we did this, this, and this. Nobody's going to be saying those were the good old days. They won't even remember it. Because the famine will be so terrible, they won't even remember the good old days. The good old days will be completely forgotten. So what is Joseph's counsel? Yes, he first of all says, do what? Look for a man. What kind of man are we supposed to look for? An overseer to take charge, and what should characterize him? Discerning and wise. And what should Pharaoh do with this individual? Yeah, but before he does that, what is he supposed to do with this man? set him over all the land of Egypt. So what is Joseph basically telling Pharaoh? Yeah, get ready, but he's basically telling Pharaoh, you don't got the wits for this one. Your intellectual capabilities are just not quite what we're looking for here. Go find someone else. So Pharaoh's going to have to humble himself. Go find someone else who's wise and discerning and set him over the land of Egypt, the whole country. In other words, put him in your position. And then what he's supposed to do, as y'all said correctly, he's supposed to be in charge of collecting the grain. Now, how much grain was he supposed to collect? How much grain would you have collected? If you had 7 years of plenty and 7 years of famine, how much grain would you have collected during the years of plenty? I would have collected half of it. So we would have been nice and steady. How much does he say to collect? A fifth, 20%. That's kind of funny to me.
Maybe it was that great
that all they needed to collect was a fifth in order to survive. Right, we're going to go on bare minimum. Oh, there's another reason why he may have done this. Joseph may have been clever beyond belief. Because who is the wise and discerning man that gets set over the land of Egypt? Joseph. You know what Joseph does with the grain that's stored up? He sells it to the Egyptians. And he first of all sells it to the Egyptians for their cattle, I think. Their money, that's right, for their money. Then he sells it to the Egyptians for their land. And then he sells it to the Egyptians for themselves. So the Egyptians sold themselves into slavery. Now, if he had done half and half, maybe there would have been enough to where everybody would have been happy. Maybe Joseph had this planned all along that he was going to get the whole thing of Egypt into the hand of Pharaoh. And so he said, don't collect too much because then you can really charge some high prices later. I don't know, maybe he was thinking that, maybe he wasn't. So Joseph gets exalted, and we said last time exaltation comes from the Lord. Exaltation, to rejoice. Exaltation, to lift up high. Joseph is exalted. And what does Pharaoh see in Joseph?
Well, he must think he's wise and discerning.
Yes, he does. What else does he see in Joseph? What? That God is with him. In fact, he says in Joseph is what? A divine spirit. He saw a divine spirit in Joseph. Now, how important were divine spirits in Egypt? Very, extremely very. I think we've been down that road before. This was a land of idolatry. And if you had a divine spirit, well, you were something special. So he sees in him a divine spirit. He also sees in him a discerning and wise individual. So where does he place Joseph? More specifically, he is overseer, but more specifically, he is second in command. Joseph is basically made Pharaoh, except for being Pharaoh. Everybody has to obey him. Everyone. Except one person. Pharaoh himself. everybody has to obey Joseph. He is second in command. And in a monarchy like Egypt had, being second in command is an extremely powerful position. So what did Pharaoh give to Joseph? His signet ring. Now, why is that important? Yes, but more important than that. Yeah, it's to authorize stuff. He didn't have to ask Pharaoh's permission to do anything. He had the signet ring. He didn't have three branches of government that had checks and balances on him. He had one branch of government, Joseph. And now he has the signet ring and he can authorize or do away with whatever he wants. Giving Joseph the signet ring was amazing. That we conduct this class.
Signet ring to someone who's been in jail like a couple hours before. Like, it seems like he would have.
What did Pharaoh notice?
That he had a divine spirit.
Good grief. If he has a divine spirit, he's God in the flesh. Give him the signet ring. That's how Pharaoh was thinking. And I wish I could have heard that.
She said he was the God of jail.
Always entertaining. Always entertaining. So how did Pharaoh present Joseph? And not only that, but what else did he do? Joseph rides in the second chariot, and Pharaoh says, bow the knee. In this culture and in this land, Pharaoh was to be worshipped. Joseph now is to be worshipped. Now, do I find it a bit odd that Joseph would allow people to bow the knee to him? That's what I find to be odd. But he did. But there's odder things to come. What is the name Pharaoh gives to Joseph? And nobody say it. I want Courtney to pronounce it.
What?
In verse 45. Come on, Courtney.
No.
Pronounce it for us. Zaphnath Paneah. I guess. I don't know. Zaphnath Paneah. What's the meaning of Zaphnath Paneah? Not if you lived in Egypt. What is the meaning of Zaphnath Paneah?
Probably Egyptian for God speaks, he lives. That's what my Bible says.
God speaks, he lives?
He lives.
Oh. I was wondering how geometry all of a sudden got into an Egyptian name. Okay. God lives, ellipse. Yeah, my Bible says we don't know what it means. So there are some people who may know better than others who know how to read Egyptian, but his name was changed to Zaphnath Paneah. Why? He wanted to make him as Egyptian as possible. In fact, what did Joseph do before he came to Pharaoh to relate his dream? He shaved. Because as a good Hebrew, he was probably bearded. And he probably shaved. Well, he did shave, but he probably had a beard as a good Hebrew while in jail. No need to shave it while you're in jail. But as a good Egyptian, you better have a clean-shaven face. And who is the wife that Pharaoh gives to Joseph?
Asenath, the daughter of
Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, priest of On. Now, my Bible says On is the city of Heliopolis. Anybody know what Helio means? Sun, Opolis. City of Sun. That would probably be where they
worship the sun.
Anybody know the name of the sun god? Ra. It was probably the place where they worshiped Ra.
So he married a woman who worshiped the sun?
Okay, now is that odd to you, Courtney?
I'm just starting to think that maybe Joseph wasn't quite the person that he's always made out to be in Sunday school.
Courtney? That didn't answer my question. Is that a bit odd?
Yes!
Is that a little bit odder than giving somebody who was in jail your signet ring? If you thought he had a divine spirit? You said it was a bit odd that a Pharaoh gave Joseph, who was nothing more than a common criminal, his signet ring.
Yes, that's odd.
But he perceived in him a divine spirit.
Right.
So that's not, to me, quite as odd as Joseph accepting a daughter of the priest of On as a wife. Just blended right in with the Egyptians. Why do you think that's odd, Courtney?
Well, maybe,
the law hasn't been given. The Jews weren't told they couldn't marry Gentiles. That's what I was trying. And I wish I could have heard that. What'd she say? Yeah, she always does. She's always funny. So there was no law against
marrying foreigners.
Was there a law against
being worshipped? I mean,
do you think Joseph worshipped Ra? No, I don't think he did. I think he was a worshiper of the true and the living God. That may have been a custom where you like tipping your hat to someone. I don't know if it was real worship where they acknowledged him as a god. If they had, I'm sure he would have refused it, but maybe not. I don't know. What I'm trying to get across with the question that we had with the brain burner is that there are a lot of things we assume in a 21st century America that was taking place in 1800 BC in Joseph's life. He doesn't have the benefit of anything. He doesn't have the benefit of Genesis being written. He is part of Genesis. So he doesn't have a lot to go on. So can he marry a Gentile woman? Yes. Who else was he going to marry? A good God-fearing woman in Egypt? That's about all he had. So, do we use Joseph marrying a priest of On as a example of how to pick a wife? I don't think so. Because we have a lot more information. We have the teaching from the Apostle Paul not to be unequally yoked with unbelievers. So we have much more information, much more to go on. Revelation is, what's the word I'm looking for, Jim? Progressive. Revelation is progressive. And Joseph just didn't have a lot of it. So he has two sons, Manasseh and Ephraim. Manasseh means one who causes to forget. I think every firstborn child should be named Manasseh. It causes parents to lose their mind. I'm just going with the flow of the class tonight. And Ephraim means fruitfulness. And this is where we're going to get the two tribes of Israel that will make Joseph basically known as the what of Israel, since he gets two tribes, the firstborn. Joseph was not born first in Jacob's family. So when you read expressions of firstborn, very oftentimes the firstborn male received the inheritance of the firstborn, thus the name firstborn. But not always. Sometimes a child born 10th or 11th, like Joseph, receives the firstborn inheritance because he's the favored son. And Joseph will receive a double portion in the land. There will be no tribe known as Joseph, but there will be two tribes known as Manasseh and Ephraim. And they are the two tribes that represent Joseph in the land. Now, as we close, I want us to just think again about what's going on in the life of Joseph. Here is a man who, as far as I can tell, is a God-fearing, righteous man of integrity who is now married to a priestess, the daughter of a priestess, a priest of On, and has two children by her. How long are they going to be in the land of Egypt, the nation of Israel? 400 years. What kind of influence do you think Egypt's going to have on them? The influence of Egypt on the nation of Israel is probably underestimated. It is probably assumed by most people that because Yahweh spoke to Moses and Moses comes to the Pharaoh and says, let my people go, and my people are Yahweh's people, and Yahweh said to let them go, and they all came out and followed Moses and were following Yahweh, that these people were all God-fearing worshipers of the true and the living God. They probably were no such thing. They probably never have been. What? As soon as Moses leaves, a golden calf gets made, which was the big, strong god of Egypt. Yes. There were many reasons why Moses asked those questions. One was because of his failed attempt at the beginning when he slugged the Egyptian and buried him in the sand. And then he was breaking up a fight among Hebrews the next day. And their question was, who made you a judge over us? So he wants to have a name this time. So that if he's going to be the judge of Israel, he wants to be able to tell them who? Yahweh. And so there's a good reason why he would want to know the name of the God he's going to go back and tell them. And since the Egyptians had so many gods, sun god, the fish god, the Nile god, God's name is I Am. He is the one that truly exists and always has. Good question. Any other comments or questions or oddities that you just can't put together? All right, let me close this in prayer. Father, again, we marvel at your sovereign hand in the history of man, particularly even as we read in the history of Joseph and in the nation of Israel, how you are moving in every aspect of everyone's life to bring about your desired will. We marvel at your wisdom. We marvel at your power. And we marvel at your grace that even as we see flaws perhaps in Joseph that we may never have seen before, we recognize the greatness of the flaws in our own character as well. And we thank you that by your grace you have provided for us a Savior, the Lord Jesus Christ, and that you have raised him from the dead and have given us a living hope. And we thank you for revealing yourself to us in your word, for to know you is eternal life. And for this we give you abundant thanks. In Christ's name we pray.